we've heard this morning that Mr. Trump and Mr. Sanders have won the New Hampshire primaries. They're not caucuses, they're primaries apparently. And on the line to help us with that is Simon Marks. Hello, Simon. Very good morning to you.
Hello, Malcolm. It is indeed me.
First of all, I want to ask exactly why these are called, they're not called a caucus like we had last week. These are primaries. What's the difference?
Yes, well, the difference is that you'll remember that a week ago when we were talking about Iowa, the caucuses are these sort of rather informal gatherings where people come together in living rooms or fire stations or schools, and a sort of consensus emerges at each individual meeting as to which candidate they are going to support. This is a primary election. It's an election. It's people showing up at polling stations and casting their ballots in time-honored way, and therefore more prone to the sort of scientific analysis that the political fraternity and political junkies like to apply to things like this. And so it is yielding a treasure trove of data as to why Hillary Clinton has run, for example, into so much trouble in New Hampshire, and also information about why Donald Trump has managed to breathe new life into his presidential campaign following his, for him, disappointing second place in Iowa. He's triumphed in New Hampshire.
Because he won by quite a long way in New Hampshire.
Yes, I mean, to be fair to everybody, you know, for once, the opinion pollsters got it right. It has been pretty clear for many weeks now that both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders were enjoying commanding leads in New Hampshire. The vote isn't completely in yet, but with, 40% of the vote reported in both primary contests. Let's look at the Republicans first. Donald Trump, 33% of the vote. Second place is Ohio Governor John Kasich. We can talk about him in a second, with 15.6%. So Donald Trump so far enjoying a commanding lead in excess of 15% in the Republican primary. On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders with 59% of the vote. Hillary Clinton with 38% of the vote. So Bernie Sanders almost 20 points clear of Hillary Clinton there, with under half the vote counted. But it's very clear that they have won these contests, and as a result have created all sorts of difficulties for their opponents. Hillary Clinton has been on her feet in the last few minutes telling her supporters that she still loves New Hampshire. But as far as she's concerned, this is the point at which the struggle for the Democratic Party's nomination now goes national. And she argues that when we move on to the next states, places like South Carolina, which will be voting in a couple of weeks' time, she's got the organization and also the depth of support among African-American voters there and in other parts of the American South to start pulling victories out of the bag. But she definitely needs to show that that's the case, because Bernie Sanders is now looking like a much more formidable opponent than I think anybody would have imagined even 6 months ago.
Simon, morning. It's Richard here.
Hi, Richard. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Let's talk about the Democrats first of all. To some extent, the Bernie Sanders victory here, people are saying it's a local skirmish. He's from Vermont, next door to New Hampshire. There's just a lot of love for him locally. How much can we read into this victory for Sanders for the Democrats?
Look, it's a great question, and I think one can definitely point to the fact that Bernie Sanders is a very known quantity in New Hampshire because, as you point out, it's next door to Vermont, which is the state that he comes from and that he represents in the United States Senate. However, there are things that one can see taking place in New Hampshire that also took place in Iowa, where, remember, Bernie Sanders was just very narrowly pipped at the post by Hillary Clinton. And they show that Hillary Clinton is having enormous difficulties getting young people, and particularly young women, to support her. Bernie Sanders won the overwhelming number of votes in New Hampshire here today from voters under the age of 50, whereas Hillary Clinton was taking votes from voters over the age of 50. And, you know, this followed a weekend in which Bill Clinton was deployed to accuse Bernie Sanders of sexism, to accuse his supporters of misogynistic attacks on Hillary Clinton. You saw some prominent women from the Democratic camp Gloria Steinem, the former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, telling groups of women in New Hampshire that they were betraying their gender if they voted for Bernie Sanders. That is all indicative of the problem Hillary Clinton has got inspiring a younger generation of voters for whom, you know, she's just part of the fixtures and fittings of the American political scene at this point. She doesn't bring anything new and particularly engaging or exciting to the campaign trail. And it's also indicative of the fact that Bernie Sanders' strength in these two early contests perhaps goes beyond simply local factors.
So last week, for the Republicans, it was Cruz, and this week it's Trump. Last week for the Democrats, it was Clinton. This week it's Sanders. At what point, how far into the future do you think before we get some sort of trend emerging?
I think we've got a way to go, Malcolm. I mean, definitely nothing's going to be resolved, clearly, this side of Super Tuesday, which is on March the 1st. When the race really does go national, when you've got more than 10 primaries and caucuses taking place on the same day. But I would say these political parties are preparing themselves for the possibility of, you know, the outcome of these races perhaps not even being resolved before summer arrives here in the United States. On the Republican side, it's worth talking about the battle that is taking place in New Hampshire for second place. And it seems that out of the blue, the governor of Ohio, John Kasich, who has barely registered in the campaign so far, has suddenly come through with a second-place performance, pushing Ted Cruz, the Iowa winner, into third place, Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio behind him. John Kasich, I think, will now argue that he's the man, the moderate, the experienced politician, the man with decades of experience both in Washington as a member of Congress and now in Ohio running the state, that he's the man who can save the Republican Party from extremists like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. And all of that suggests that at least on the Republican side, this race is going to drag on for many, many more weeks to come.
Simon, let's talk about Mike Bloomberg. Reading in the Financial Times this week an interview with him saying that he... You're laughing already. Jump in.
I shouldn't laugh. It's not fair to laugh. I mean, you know, Mike Bloomberg keeps intimating that he might get into the race. And he's essentially said that he will get into the race if Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are the candidates. I mean, the complaint that he's making, which is a perfectly justifiable complaint, is that this election campaign so far has been utterly devoid of substance, extraordinarily banal, and, as he would put it, and has put it, embarrassing for the United States. And he believes that the way could be clear if the parties embrace candidates like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, that the way could be clear for a third-party candidacy. But, you know, we've seen attempted third-party runs in the past. Listeners of a certain age will remember men like Ross Perot and John Anderson, who tried to run for the presidency as third-party candidates before. It's incredibly difficult to do. You need money. Well, Bloomberg's certainly got lots of that. You need organization, and you've got to get that organization formed very, very quickly. It's also not clear to me that, you know, outside New York, where he's a known quantity, and not, by the way, a known quantity without controversy, that outside New York there really is a constituency clamoring for Michael Bloomberg to get into the race. That, of course, could change depending on the outcome of these primaries and caucuses. But, you know, Bloomberg says he's not going to make a decision until March. It's hard to see what changes, frankly, between now and March that would allow him to make that decision and to get moving.
Finally, Simon, what happens next?
We are all off to Nevada and South Carolina. Those are the next two contests. And I think there'll be a huge focus on Hillary Clinton in South Carolina, where she will seek to demonstrate that she can really mobilize African-American voters particularly and demonstrate that they are passionate about her. And the Republicans will continue, I think, to jockey for position, and we'll have to see whether Donald Trump can have impact in a state like South Carolina. And then everybody gets ready for Super Tuesday, March the 1st. That's definitely the next big date in the diary where the contours of this race may start settling down and we may get a real sense of the shape of things to come.
You mentioned the sort of the more extreme politics and the sort of lack of substance coming through. Is it turning the American public off? Are they just sort of losing interest at the moment?
Well, I think it is. I'm not sure that it's fair to say that it's turning the American public off, because if you look at the numbers, for example, of viewers that are tuning into the presidential debates on television, they're actually at record levels. So one could say that by some metrics, engagement in this campaign is at an all-time high. What they are doing, though, is resulting in people heading into the hands of some of these populist candidates like Bernie Sanders, like Donald Trump, like Ted Cruz back in Iowa, where you see members of the public craving someone who doesn't come from the political mainstream here in the United States. And that's a huge challenge for the elites of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, both of whom must be sitting back here tonight and watching the outcome of their respective races in New Hampshire and wondering if their political parties could soon be removed from their control by the kind of grassroots support that is coalescing around people like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, for whom there is no love lost by the elites of those two political parties. So, you know, it's too early to say that we're on the brink of a massive political shift in the United States, but these are very uncomfortable hours for the grandees of the Republican and Democratic parties.
Simon Marks, thank you very much indeed for talking to us so late your time and so early ours. President, Chief Correspondent at FSM, we do appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Malcolm.